The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Nosebleeds, your WFUV Sports home for all the news around Major League Baseball. I am Tucker Austin, joined today by Max Spitza and Bradley Byrne. Today's Saturday, July 26th, as of the recording of this podcast, and it's Hall of Fame weekend. We have a crew up there right now. They were on one-on-one earlier today. They reported a little bit, got some of their content out there on the air. They're doing some really cool stuff up there in Cooperstown. But before we get into it, Max, we'll start with you. How are you doing today?
Doing great, you know. Woke up, listened to a little Alabama Shakes this morning, got me moving. Stepped outside, realized it was 105, and went right back inside. So, been a chill Saturday though.
It's been a pretty good Saturday. Woke up at around 8 o'clock. Didn't want to sleep in because I know there's baseball 1 o'clock. Sadly, the Yankees did get blown out, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, it was a pretty good morning. Went for a two-hour bike ride this morning, even though it was 105 degrees. Got to get the exercise in there. But
oh yeah,
now my nose bleeds, so the days just got better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was on one-on-one earlier, and then I had to drive home. So it's been kind of a long day, especially after covering the Yankees yesterday. In that game, they lost 12-5. It's been a long, like, 24 and change hours. Maybe we'll call it a long 30 hours. But really happy to be on Nosebleeds. Happy to be back on Nosebleeds. I don't think I've been on in a while, but you know, we can get right into it with the Hall of Fame talk. The 2025 Hall of Fame class includes Ichiro Suzuki, CeCe Sabathia, and Billy Wagner. With additionally the Classic Baseball Era Committee sending Dick Allen and David Parker to the Hall of Fame. Now, Dick Allen and David Parker are both sadly passed away before this ceremony. So the only living attendants will be CeCe, Ichiro, and Billy Wagner. But really quickly, I want to get your guys' thoughts on this because, I mean, Ichiro is the first Japanese-born player to make it into the Hall of Fame. Insane career. As a Yankee fan, I loved watching Ichiro for the 3 years that he was in pinstripes. And then stacked on top of Ichiro, you got CeCe Sabathia, who for Cleveland fans and for Milwaukee fans is a hero in their own right, but for Yankee fans even more so because of that 2009 World Series and because of how he was effectively a team captain while the Yankees were captainless after Derek Jeter retired. CeCe was absolutely incredible. Billy Wagner, I didn't have as much of an experience with him. He's known not primarily for his time with the Mets, but he did spend time in Queens. So Bradley, we'll start here with you. Any of these guys stand out in particular for you, or I guess like on a personal level, you have any connections with Ichiro, CeCe?
I'd probably say Ichiro. Well, first off, one thing, it's still criminal in my opinion that Ichiro wasn't unanimous. I think it was by one vote, right? Arguably one of the
situation of Jeter.
Arguably the greatest contact hitter in MLB history. I don't think that's really crazy to say, but it's a huge honor to make the Hall of Fame, especially, you know, for a guy like Ichiro, who his cultural impact was just leaps and bounds over his play, obviously. But congratulations to all of these players. But I think Ichiro definitely stands out to me, mostly for the fact that I still think he should have been unanimous. That still kind of bothers me that Mariano Rivera is the only unanimous guy in the Hall of Fame, because I still think guys like Ken Griffey Jr., Derek Jeter should be unanimous. But once again, congratulations to all these guys. And I definitely think Ichiro probably stands out the most to me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll start. CeCe Sabathia, like, obviously as a Brewers fan, even though he was on the Brewers, I think no one can deny the fact that he is a Yankee through and through. And then kind of Ichiro. I mean, I saw Ichiro's last game in Seattle as a Mariner. So got a jersey and everything, and then literally 4 or 5 days later he went to the Yankees. But yeah, I mean, Ichiro, I think he not only does so much or did so much for Seattle as a
Oh, I mean, he
city,
still does. He's
still
basically
does. Yeah,
he
he's, I mean,
basically still plays. They have him in full
but
uniform walking around the facilities.
he is honestly like a legend, especially to the Japanese people. I mean, you see these players come up, and if they are able to meet Ichiro or talk to them, it's just like insane respect for him just because of everything he's done, and continues to do, not only for the MLB but for Japan baseball as a whole. So I think he definitely, I mean, I was excited to see that. I thought that was amazing. Billy Wagner, you know, great. I know Barrett's probably stoked right now. But yeah, I mean, the other guy, not obviously didn't know too much about Dave Parker or Dick Allen, just because not my lifetime or close to it, but congrats to them as well. I mean, I'm pretty sure Dave Parker was also he was a Milwaukee Brewer for maybe a year. Maybe. I don't even think it was a full year. It might have been like he was on the team and then we got rid of him. But yeah, so I mean, love to see it. I think Hall of Fame weekend's so awesome. Kind of wish I was out there right now with the guys out there, but great time. I mean, I'm very excited to see their speeches.
Yeah, and I also love what the MLB did with the limited time hats that they sent around the league. All the
Those
teams
are
in Major
great.
League
I love
Baseball,
seeing
especially
those.
the Brooklyn Dodgers hat.
Yeah,
That's one of
the
my
old
favorite
Brooklyn
hats.
hat. I love the Giants hat that's never been
Oh,
worn
me
on the
too.
field
I like that
before,
one as
and it
well.
like throws their logo from the 70s when they moved to San Francisco onto the hat. I thought that was a really great idea. The Marlins full teal hat looks awesome. The Tampa
Did
Bay
you guys see?
Rays from
Yeah,
their
I'm a little
first 2
biased, but
years.
have you guys seen the Brewers one? It's
Yeah.
actually nice. I like
Nice.
it. The
Good.
nice M logo is super cool.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, there were a couple teams that had that block lettering that was just kind of how their team used to how their brand used to be, but I think it still holds up. Like the Brewers block M looked fine. The Texas Rangers block T looked great.
Oh yeah.
I'm trying to think of any other teams. I
It's
thought it was
so
funny that Cincinnati and Cleveland wound up with relatively the same logo because they ran that same little like pinched C. But then there's teams like the Cubs and the Red Sox who haven't really changed their uniforms at all in the past 100 years. So the Cubs are wearing the same hat, the Red Sox are wearing the same hat. The Yankees, surprisingly enough, got like a little condensed Yankee logo to make it look a little bit more like the teams from like the 1910s. So I thought that
those are
was
funny.
cool.
The Mets and the Yankees ones were funny just because it was like so similar that it's like you really had to like look at the hat. You're like, oh, they just put a patch on it. It's like, no, it's like slightly different, but it's like it's
Well,
not enough.
the
It's
Red
not
Sox,
enough to be like,
they just
oh.
slapped a patch on the side of the Red Sox main
I
ball.
also like the Diamondbacks hat. It just reminds me of the Randy Johnson days.
Yes. Oh, the Diamondbacks, they had such a good color scheme back in the day. Saying back in the day, it's like the early 2000s, but
Dude, I think being in Arizona, I've never met anyone who's been like, I love the D-backs uniforms now. They're so
no,
much better than they were.
no.
Everyone's like, let's bring, why don't we just go back to the
Even though
purple?
the
Yeah.
modern Diamondbacks brought back that teal color, they brought it back a little
But
bit.
it was like a weird like neon teal
Yeah, it was
almost.
like an
It was odd.
accent. It was a little odd. But yeah, I loved that. Loved the whole weekend, except for the performance of the New York Yankees. And I guess that it can be our segue into the Yankee portion of this episode. The New York Yankees, they played a game earlier today as of this recording. They played game two against the Phillies and dropped the series promptly. They lost 9-4 to the Philadelphia Phillies earlier on today. Giancarlo Stanton with a home run, and that's pretty much the highlight for the Yankees. Marcus Stroman couldn't get out of the fourth inning, gave up 4 runs, 4 walks, and 4 strikeouts. After that, the rest of the Yankees relievers were relatively fine, which compared to Friday night, I was expecting the bullpen to basically be useless the entire weekend. But then, you get down to Alan Winans, who the last time I saw him pitch, he was pitching in a 7-0 loss to the A's. That was the last time I saw Alan Winans on a mound at Yankee Stadium. The next time he's on a mound at Yankee Stadium, Winans gives up 3 runs late against the Phillies to seal the deal. So again, it's the bullpen burning the Yankees. But really, I think there's bigger, more pressing news for the New York Yankees, aside from the fact that they have fallen to now 2 games below 500 since the All-Star break. News coming out today that Aaron Judge was getting imaging on an elbow has now progressed into Aaron Judge being placed on the 10-day injured list for that elbow issue. It's a flexor strain, I believe, but no tear in the UCL, so he will avoid Tommy John surgery, at least for now. But Brad, we can start with you on this one. How do the Yankees go about the next 10 days of their schedule without their captain?
I just kind of feel like it sucks for the Yankees because imagine if Aaron Judge got, I'm not, obviously, I don't want to say Aaron Judge should be injured. Imagine if he had gotten injured 3 days ago before they traded for Ryan McMahon. Imagine they would probably be able to push more on the table for a guy like Eugenio Suarez because without Judge, you basically have no other really power guys on the team. So the Yankees just caught a really, really bad break because right after they trade for Ryan McMahon, they lose out on Eugenio Suarez and then Aaron Judge goes down. And I feel like this is, I'm not saying that this is the decline of Aaron Judge, but are we seeing that like that Mike Trout thing where after a couple of injuries, they relegate him to DH for a while? So I'm really hoping that's not the case with Aaron Judge because like Mike Trout's one of my favorite players of all time. So I'm really hoping that we're not seeing the slow decline of Aaron Judge just shifting to that DH role because although Aaron Judge last year wasn't really that good at defense, it's still kind of cool seeing him in the outfield because he's one of the best players, and obviously people pay a lot of money to see Aaron Judge. So relegating him to DH really isn't ideal for the fans, but hopefully prayers up to Aaron Judge, everything's okay. And the Yankees, they gotta be buyers at the deadline. They need some bullpen help, obviously. And I think one more bat, because with Aaron Judge gone for minimum 10 days, they're not gonna be able to hit a lot of home runs. So obviously Eugenio Suarez is off the table, but try and push for maybe a middle of the order power guy that can put some runs on the board.
I'm
No,
thinking like just positionally for because the Yankees now for the next 10 days, they only have three outfielders. Jason Dominguez is going to play in the outfield every single day for the next 10 days. And I guess you can't really plan for Judge to go away for longer. So my only thought would be if they knew about Judge before they got McMahon, they may have gone after an outfielder or somebody else to shore up the outfield, at least while Judge is gone. But it kind of seems at the same time, like if Judge comes back in 10 days and he's fine, then you went and got somebody at the deadline who plays outfield, but now you have five outfielders and it kind of becomes an issue there. But Max, what do you think?
yeah, I mean, before this injury, he's hitting 160 after the All-Star break, like 11 strikeouts out of like 25 ABs. He wasn't playing great. But also, if this is only a 10-day injury, this is probably the best 10 days that they could get because they play the Rays and then they play the Marlins. They're in a good. It's not a terrible spot to have this injury right now. I will say though, I mean, overall, I honestly going into the beginning of like the trade area, I thought the Yankees were fine, like offensively. I felt like they were, especially like Cody Bellinger starting to get a little hot. I think if players like that keep stepping up, they should be okay. But then obviously if this Judge injury is more than a 10-day, right? I remember when I first saw it, and they use the code words whenever talking about someone's elbow, but there's so many times you've seen people like Bryce Harper, they say the same thing. They're like, oh, just we're just doing a little test, like a little imaging, that's all. And it's like, all right, well, the amount of times you see it, you immediately think Tommy John. You don't think, oh, it's a strain. You go, Tommy John, season's over, we're done. Judge is gonna have to be DH or first base for the rest of his career. Like, that's what you kind of think in your head, right? Like all those things happen. So definitely best case scenario for Yankees fans and for the Yankees itself. Because, I mean, that's a big loss if he goes down with Tommy John or becomes like Bryce Harper and just becomes an absolute stud at first base.
The next 10 days could determine the Yankees' season. How this team responds to losing Aaron Judge over the next week and change, it could very well play into like what they're fighting for when it comes down like the stretch run in September. It could be the difference between the Yankees fighting for the last wild card spot or still battling for the division with the Blue Jays. And it's crazy, but when you look at the standings, the Yankees now trail the Blue Jays by six full games. The Blue Jays haven't played yet as of the recording of this podcast, so they dropped a half game losing to the Phillies today. They stand to lose another half game if the Blue Jays keep winning, but the Yankees now six games out of first in the division. But I believe they still hold a one game, maybe two game advantage over the last wild card spot, which is currently held by the Boston Red Sox. So, but like that's how close it is, though. And so if the Yankees go on a really bad cold streak without Aaron Judge in the lineup, say they drop, and then this is like maybe, I mean, worst case scenario would be dropping 10 in a row, but like let's say they maybe win like two or three, like losing seven of the next 10, it could completely tank the season for the Yankees. So they need to find something in that clubhouse, find something in that dugout, rally around the fact that your captain is injured, and try to pick the team up. If the Yankees can go 500 with Judge out of the lineup, they can keep themselves in the running for postseason play down the stretch. But it's going to be very, very interesting, and I'm going to be stressing pretty much for the next week and a half about what the Yankees do on a day-to-day basis, because it could be everything. But that's the Yankees situation right now, fairly grim. But who knows? Hopefully, a couple more additions at the deadline. Ideally, bullpen, because the bullpen needs to be shored up bad. Starting rotation is still banged up. No Clark Schmidt until 2027. Still no Luis Gil. Hopefully he's back in August, but the Yankees are just in a really, really tough spot this year. And going into this trade deadline, it's going to be interesting to see if Cashman makes any more moves than Ryan McMahon. I don't think it would be insane, or at least I don't think Yankee fans should be surprised if Brian Cashman just sits on his hands this week and just punts the season effectively until next year. It's been an idea that I've been floating around pretty much since April, just because it feels like such an off year where the Yankees didn't really get much better in the off season. Like they added Goldschmidt, they added Bellinger, but you lose a guy like Soto and no Gerrit Cole for a full season. That it's not it doesn't feel like the same team that made it to the World Series last year. So Yankees in a really tough spot for the next 10 days, but you head over to Queens for a team that is in a much better place than the New York Yankees. The New York Mets are currently playing a series against the San Francisco Giants as of this recording. They won the first game 8-1 last night. They play game two in about 3 hours at 9:05. But in last night's game, it was the top of the order between Nimmo, Lindor. They both were incredible last night, and Soto, of course, he continues to hit very, very well. Soto has gotten incredibly hot ever since pretty much all of New York media was questioning what happened to Juan Soto in April and May. But now all of that noise has gone away, and Juan Soto's pretty much returned to form. I'm still not sure if he's reached Yankee levels yet as a Met, but I can't imagine he's not going to get there at some point, probably by the end of the season. But Francisco Lindor is making an MVP case every single day. And he might become the next captain of the Mets. Who knows? The David Wright number retirement has people throwing the word captain around in the Mets camp. But yeah, the Mets are in a really great place, but their pitching has been their sort of I guess Achilles heel over most of the season. The starting pitching's been fine, but at times the bullpen has been really questionable, and even the starting pitching has been questionable. I talked to Kurt Sippel on one-on-one earlier today, and he's been covering the Mets this year, and he basically told me David Peterson is the effective ace of this Mets staff. Even though it's supposed to be Sean Manaea, it's actually David Peterson, at least for right now. So Max, we can start with you for this one. The Mets are red hot, but the deadline is approaching. They already made a move. They picked up Gregory Soto from the Orioles. But do the Mets need to make any more moves? Honestly, I don't know if they do, because they shored up the bullpen with Gregory Soto, and the lineup top to bottom has been hitting really well.
Yeah, honestly, with getting Gregory Soto, I think they are perfectly fine. I don't see a reason to get anyone else. I was watching the game last night, and Logan Webb, I mean, great pitcher, fantastic pitcher, even probably top pitcher, one of the top pitchers in the league. And the top of that lineup attacked him quick and attacked him fast, scoring two in that first inning, which is a big deal, especially when you have Holmes on the mound pitching the way he's been pitching. He actually threw really great last night, and I was really impressed by that. Really wish I put down a not a Nerfy of a first run inning, because that Nerfy failed on me. But I think they're good right now. I think they're so hot. It's difficult when you're red hot to go out and be like, all right, we need to go get this person. We need to go trade away picks. We need to go trade away like prospects. Like it's difficult when you're doing great. I think if there's going to be a moment, maybe they hit a little bit of a bump in the road, maybe in August, and all the Mets fans are gonna be like, oh, why didn't we go get this person? Why didn't we go get that person? But I think they're going to be perfectly fine with the move they've already made. And I mean, they're looking great. I mean, Phillies, they're staying on them because they're beating up on the Yankees. But I mean, that the NL so far has just been a great race. You have multiple teams with 60 wins already, and I think, I mean, they're red hot, and they are a dangerous team.
No, 100%. And obviously, if David Stearns wants like a Jarren Duran or something, he can easily get him with the snap of his fingers because he's one of the most dangerous people in all of baseball. But I think he's just going to let the season play out, not get any huge names like Luis Robert or Jarren Duran, and just see if the offense does fall apart in October or September. Then I would definitely, try to get a third baseman, because I feel like if you're really looking at this lineup and you're thinking that there's one little hole, it's probably third base. If you can maybe get Brett Beatty's been good. I've actually been very surprised at Brett Beatty, but if you really, really want to like look at the lineup top to bottom and see like a change that could happen, it'd probably be third base for me. But I just don't think Alex Bregman, especially after being injured for a month, he's probably going to opt out, I assume, of his contract, and he's probably going to want more than 40 million. I just don't see the Mets giving him more than 40 million. So I think maybe at most they add one or two more bullpen guys, not like Emmanuel Clase or something, but maybe like one or two more arms just to really solidify that bullpen. But I think the Mets should just honestly not make any more moves. I would be fine, obviously, with some bullpen guys, but the roster has been good. If it ain't broke, don't fix it,
I might be wrong. Did Brett Beatty play second base for a little last night? Could be completely
I think
wrong.
he did for like
I
a
remember seeing
little
that
bit,
they had a shift going, and I was like, what's he doing over at second base right now? It's like I'm like, did they move him over for the sh like they can't do that anymore. I was like freaking out. I was like, oh, he's playing second base. All right.
Actually, I think as long as there's two infielders on either side of
On either
second, I don't think
side.
it matters who it is.
Because I know Acuna also played second base last night, so that's why I was like, maybe I missed that. Maybe I just stopped paying attention for a minute and they did like a little
Maybe the
switch.
Mets are revolutionizing the game. Maybe
Yeah,
Brett Beatty is the first positionless infielder.
you might
A
be onto
floating
something.
infielder. But yeah, I think that just about wraps us up for the Mets. Again, they play game two. They'll go for the series win tonight against the San Francisco Giants. And they're rolling. I mean, there's no reason for anyone to assume that they do anything else. But Bradley, I will say that Kurt Sippel agrees with you and thinks that the Mets are in a pretty good spot. But I think Kurt said he wanted maybe a couple more bullpen arms. And I think he mentioned a starter as well. So maybe a starting pitcher and a couple of arms for the bullpen. But guys that don't jump off the page, like you were saying, like no Emmanuel Clases or anything like that. But guys who are a little more underappreciated, who like the Mets can get after on relatively like for relatively cheap trades. So I mean, remains to be seen. Hopefully for the Mets and the Yankees, and at least for their fans, there's a lot of action and motion towards the trade deadline at the end of this week. But let's briefly touch on a couple of things from around Major League Baseball before we wrap this episode. Obviously, we already talked about the Hall of Fame, we talked about the hats and all that. But just a couple of stories from around Major League Baseball. The Mariners were the another team that were in action. They acquired Josh Naylor from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Not the name that I think a lot of people were looking at to leave Arizona first at the trade deadline. Obviously, we've already mentioned Eugenio Suarez. He was pretty much the name that was going to go from Arizona first at the deadline. At least that's what we thought until the Seattle Mariners came over the top and grabbed themselves a first baseman. Josh Naylor played great in Cleveland, and that's what got him his look in Arizona this year. And he continued to play pretty well for the Arizona Diamondbacks, but the way their season is shaped up, they wound up sellers. So, Bradley, we can start with you here. You like this move for the Mariners, and can they take it to the Astros now?
Oh, 100%. I said it, I think, on one of them the last time I was under that the Mariners just need one more bat, because at the start of the season, the Mariners couldn't hit to save their lives. It was just Cal Raleigh, and then it was just him having to carry the load. But now we have second half Julio Rodriguez, who obviously hit two home runs last night. And I said this on 101. I think the Mariners could win the ALCS if they make one more move. And I think this was the move that could really bring them over the top. I am the biggest Mariners glazer you guys will ever meet at the station.
Oh.
So I said on 101, the Mariners need to make one more move
They haven't been to the
bat-wise.
World Series, I don't think, have they? I think they might be the only team that's never played in the Fall Classic.
I think so, yeah, the Mariners. I actually had them, I think, in 2023, 2024, I actually had them making the World Series. Or no, last year I had them making the World Series, but that fell on its face. So I think the Mariners, at worst, ALDS loss, at worst.
I mean, I thought it was an interesting move. I thought there that was just like kind of out of the blue. Like you were saying, like I thought Suarez was gonna go. I thought even Zach Gallen was possibly gonna go. And then Josh Naylor goes, and it's like, all right, like that's who you guys wanted. I mean, the D-backs kind of messed up a little bit in the Suarez. They kind of started asking for a little too much, kind of showed their hands a little too early, I think. Especially with like a team like the Yankees, and kind of showed their hands. So now the league's kind of like, like we're gonna have to pay a lot for, not necessarily pay a lot, but we're gonna have to do a lot to get this guy. And I think a team like the Mariners, who are having a great season right now, I think maybe Josh Naylor might be the person they need. Maybe, I mean, he's a great bat, you know, makes a lot of contact. Still very weird though. I mean, I don't think a single person outside of the Seattle Mariners office and the Diamondbacks office knew this was going to happen. So, I mean, it was odd, but like weird things happen at the trade deadline. We'll see. Maybe he helps them get that little bump, and maybe Brad's right. Maybe they go and get to the World Series this year.
Yeah, and when Josh Naylor was in Cleveland, I remember how good he was because he was a thorn in my side as a Yankee fan.
He's
All
sneaky good.
right.
Like, it's like you
Doing the
never
Oh
expect
yeah. And you know what's even crazier is that his brother is just as sneaky good. And the Guardians hung on to Bo. They let Josh go.
it. No, they were
So
like, yeah, we'll take your younger brother. It's cool.
Josh Naylor was probably 2 more years in Cleveland from becoming a certified Yankee killer.
Yeah.
But now he's back in the American League. So the Yankees might have to deal with him in the future, but he'll be a problem in the AL West for sure. And certainly a problem for the Houston Astros. The Mariners are going to be a problem for the Houston Astros as the season winds down. But also, honestly, probably the biggest news from yesterday, overall, Nick Kurtz, the rookie from the A's. This dude is stealing the rookie of the year from his own teammate. It's unbelievable at this point. He goes 6 for 6 last night with 4 home runs. He's the first rookie in Major League Baseball history to have a 4-home-run game. And I think, what is it, only the 8th or 9th 4-homer game in MLB history? I think it's something along those lines.
I don't think they're in double
But
digits yet. I think it
no.
genuinely is like maybe nine.
It's ridiculous. And he's only the second player ever to go 6 for 6 when he hit 4 home runs. And I think the last one was in like 1919. So pretty ridiculous stuff for Nick Kurtz, making a case for rookie of the year now. He's gained so much steam in terms of popularity in Major League Baseball. But like, what do you guys have to say about it, I guess? Because it's a pretty ridiculous achievement. Actually, let me pose it like this, because I saw this question. I saw a question on social media. It was like, which was the better single day in Major League Baseball history? Ohtani 50-50 or Nick Kurtz 4 home runs as a rookie? Because people were honestly having that conversation online, and I kind of want to get your guys' takes on it. Max, we can start with you. Which was better, Ohtani 50-50 or Nick Kurtz 4 homers in a game?
I quickly looked it up though. There's been 20 times
Oh,
now.
it's
He
been
was the
12. Okay,
20th.
yeah.
He was the 20th. But honestly, like just to be that guy, I think the 4 home runs from a team, especially from a rookie on a team like the A's, who have not been that
And
great
against the Astros.
against the Astros. I mean, you look at the standings, the A's are still 15 or so games behind, but it's like they got to beat up on the Astros, which probably feels good. Yeah, I think the four. And I think just seeing that and seeing the season that the rookies and the young guys on the Athletics are having right now, I'm like, maybe in 5, 6 years, this might be a team that,
Once they're in Vegas.
yeah, once they're in Vegas and people are like, oh, like maybe I do want to get traded there, or maybe I do want to sign there, then it might actually be something that we might not, it might not be the A's in the bottom 15 games down. What they have to look forward to is their rookie going 6 for 6 with 4 bombs. It's gonna be like, oh, he hit a walk-off home run in the ALCS, you know what I mean? So I think this is good things. I think if I was an A's fan, I mean, I'd hold on to this.
Big
I would
things
forget
coming
about
for
the
A's
rest of the
fans.
season. If someone would say something to me, I'd be like, well, our rookie just hit 4 bombs with 6 for 6 for the night. So don't care that we won 50 games this year. It doesn't matter.
No, I'd probably have to say the stat line from Nick Kurtz last night. Even though obviously Shohei Ohtani did something that no other player in MLB history has done, it was also against the Marlins. I think, honestly,
It's at Lone Depot.
I think anybody can hit three home runs against the 2024 Marlins. So I'd have to go with the stat line from last night. And I think this might be a little bit of a hot take, but I think we'll get another 50-50 season before we get another rookie hitting 4 home runs in a game.
Oh, I love that take, actually. I
I
love that
agree. I
take.
think we'll get another 50-50 season before we see another rookie hit
I mean,
four
like
home runs going
players
six
like
for six.
Acuña before he got hurt, like I feel like he 1 year could have pulled it off before he tore his ACL
I don't
twice.
know. 50 homers is a lot. Like, it's a lot. It's not a lot for guys like Aaron Judge, but like,
But
forget
Aaron Judge was
Ronald
stealing
Acuña.
50 bases then.
50 homers
Yeah.
is a lot.
Because
And like
it's
the
like
stolen bases are not the problem for him.
it's like, yeah, you have to hit 50 home runs, but that means you also have to get on base 50 times apart from the home runs and be in a position to steal. And like it's like a whole
That's like
like
that's a hundred
maybe, yeah.
hits slash walks, and 50 of them have to be hits because they have to be home runs.
Yeah, and you're probably getting thrown out at least 10, 15
Yeah,
times at
it doesn't even
that.
count the times you get caught at second.
So like, yeah, I mean, I do, I agree though. I think that would happen again more than or more or quicker than a rookie
And a rookie,
hitting
yeah,
four. Yeah.
100%. But who knows, Max? Like you said, the rookies have been on something this year, and who knows if the rookies in the future are going to be any similar. But I think that just about wraps us up for our show today. Thanks so much, guys. We got through a lot in this episode for it to be under 40. But like fun stuff this weekend with the Hall of Fame. My focus is there because the Yankees make me sad. But for Bradley Byrne and for Max Spezza, I have been Tucker Austin, and this has been Nosebleeds, your WFUV Sports home for everything baseball and a production of WFUV Sports. We'll catch you guys next time.
Born